Riley Auto Parts ASA Fastlane. Only on Real Racing USA. Meet the racers of America's most exciting short track racing series every Wednesday night from 8 p.m. until 9 p.m. From the Milwaukee Mile to Bristol Motor Speedway, Five Flags in Nashville, the ASA is the racing series where young talent meets wily veterans in extreme short track competition. O'Reilly is America's auto parts store, and the ASA is America's premier late model series. O'Reilly Auto Parts ASA Fastlane gets you close to the action and behind the scenes with the real stories from the drivers themselves. The O'Reilly ASA Fastlane, only on Real Racing USA.
Power Master is your ASA series sponsor for the XS Power Batteries. Power Master is pleased to announce the introduction of the XS Power series of batteries. XS Power Batteries for racing applications and batteries for your car audio application. 12-volt batteries for street machines, street rods, off-road vehicles, and even motorcycles. XS Power Batteries means 30% more power and no battery spilling. Power Master also carries your starters and alternators. Visit us on the web at www.powermastermotorsports.com.
This is O'Reilly ASA Fastlane.
Yep, that hurt.
Little.
Do you need to raise your land and business to new heights? Then you need to call Evergreen Development and Construction. They do it all, from land development, construction, drainage, excavating, site prep, and even environmental projects. No job is too big for Evergreen Development and Construction. Give them a call at 813-478-8847. And don't forget to check out the late model Evergreen Development Construction race team. They'll be at a track near you. And remember, just think green. Evergreen Development and Construction. 813-478-8847.
And this is the O'Reilly ASA Fastlane for this Wednesday night. I'm Jack Smith, and Terry Wall's with me here, and we got a plethora of young race car drivers, and some not so young, on with us tonight who race in the ASA late model series. How you doing tonight, Terry? You over that cold and all that stuff?
I'm pretty well over it, but you know, Jack, you can't use big words like plethora, okay?
I like doing that, man. You know me.
It's just a down-home country racing show. We can't use words like that.
Man,
you might scare people.
Well, you know, hey, them NASCAR guys do it. Why can't we do it?
Well, NASCAR is a different story.
I got all you guys saying that stuff. Where are we going with this show tonight? Who we got on tonight? We got some David Wilson and.
Well, yeah, we're gonna we'll have Chris Stump on the show, a driver out of Tipsy, I believe, Ohio. We can make fun of him on that. But then we're gonna have David Wilson, Steve Brooks, and Jerry Gershner, yeah.
Jeremy Gershner.
We're going to have him on. And that will be an exciting interview with Jeremy.
Yeah, it's always exciting with Jeremy, and we're going to talk to David Wilson about how he's not going to wreck him. He's not going to be wreck him Wilson this year. He's going to be something different. he's got a plan.
Got a plan not to wreck, right?
Yeah, so let's get going, man. Who we have on the line with us?
We have a young gentleman. I'll be honest, I don't know much about, but I've seen a lot of pictures of him. He's out of Ohio, and he's going to run, I believe, the ASA North this year. Chris Stump.
All right, welcome to the show, Chris. I've seen you tooling around Lakeland.
Yeah, how you doing?
We're doing good, man. It's 80 degrees here.
We've been spoiled though up here in Ohio. It was actually 60 degrees yesterday, and now they're calling for snow.
Yeah, I was going to say, so it's not going to last, Chris. I used to live in Erie, Pennsylvania. I know what that deal's like, man.
Gotcha. But enjoy it while it does.
Yeah, gotcha.
So how do you assess your trip to Lakeland, Chris?
I think it was a pretty good start to the 2007 season. 2006 was probably the worst year of my career, so
he must have bumped his head.
I missed a year, didn't I? So 2007, I'm sorry, was probably the worst year of my career. so to finish top three all in one piece. And we're trying some different things down there, and most of the things worked, some of them didn't, but we have something to build upon for going in the first points race in March.
Let me ask you, Chris, I took a picture, several pictures, as a matter of fact. We caught the whole sequence when Sean Murphy had finally ran down Eddie Hoffman, and they kind of made contact, whatever, down there in turn three. And, man, that must have been a bit scary. You got right up under Sean when you guys were all checking up.
Yeah, if I wouldn't have hit him, I think he would have crashed. I actually picked up the back of his car and kind of straightened him up.
Yeah.
We both went through it. But if I would have stayed off of him like I should have, he probably would have got T-boned, and I would have been sitting in the catbird seat. But, we're pretty lucky, though, to make it through that one.
Yeah, I got the picture of your nose right up underneath his, like you said, lifted him up a little bit there.
You have to go to Real Racing USA, Chris, and look at those pictures.
Yeah, they're on the in the photo gallery from Lakeland there at the Speed Fest. It was pretty cool. But had you raced at Lakeland before, Chris?
Yeah, I actually ran what I like to call the real ASA back in 2003 and 2004, so the old national tour, I guess, with the fuel injected cars. So I ran there a couple times. So the first time I was down there, place just seemed, just huge. I'd never been on anything over a half mile at the time. But, since going back, I've done some speedway racing, Kentucky Speedway, Charlotte, and Atlanta. So it just seemed like, just a small little racetrack now.
So you raced in the year when the numbers were on the back quarter panels?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, I remember that race at Lakeland when they were there with those. It was a couple of things from our point of view. It was like it was almost impossible to keep up with who the cars were because of the numbers, the way they were on the cars. And then I remember, boy, that was a crash fest, man, that race that at Lakeland.
Yeah, I remember Gary St. Amant was in a pretty big crash.
Yep.
Neisner was. And, the whole – I think the idea behind the numbers on the rear quarter panels they kind of got from the Goodies Dash series, where everyone kind of had, a nickname like the Bandit and
right.
Whatnot. But, they wanted the guys to be recognized by their sponsors. But, the way the economy was at the time and still really is, a big sponsor to put on your door and fill it up is hard to come by. So
yeah, and they had that funky way of starting, remember? Because you had to, you probably never forget it, but you could pick your lane.
Well, yeah, what it was is, you were designated to the inside, but basically if you had the guts to go on the outside, you could go up there. So you always have the guys, running, 10th. They had nothing to lose, so they go flying up there, and they'd be, obviously slower than the guys up front, so they'd be chopping their way down to the bottom and causing accidents. And they got rid of that, I think, after the third race. So
yeah. Yeah, I remember Mike Cope in particular was quite vocal about that. But, that was a long time ago. So what do you got, Terry, are we going somewhere this year, man?
I was just going to ask Chris, are you going to run the whole North or the whole Challenge or the whole South race to try and run for the championship?
We're going to run the whole Challenge race. The team I drive for is 5K Motorsports out of West Bend, Wisconsin. And we have two young drivers, Cody Smith and Brett Moffitt, I believe is the kid's name, 15-year-old. And both of them will be running the North Series. And last year I mentored two young drivers, Alex Kennedy and Cody Smith, in the North and South, and acted as a spotter and driver coach. And this year I'll be, I believe, helping Brett, and Charlie Menard will be helping Cody. And Charlie actually spots for me this year in the Challenge Series, so he's going to be a big help.
Charlie's not running his own car this year?
No, Charlie, he recently got married, and some other things have gone on off the track, and he no longer is, I would say, involved with the Menards Racing Organization. But, he's come aboard, and I think he's going to be a big help.
Well, that's cool.
I agree. I think Charlie'd be an asset anywhere.
Yeah, I remember we had him on the show. That Terry, he was just getting ready to get married.
Yeah.
It was just like a week or two or something. I mean,
and as normal, when you get married, racing just goes out the door.
Well, I got married last year.
Oops.
But my wife and I, we'd been dating since high school, and I'm 27 now, so she kind of learned, my priorities and what I'm all about and what makes me happy. So, she deals with it. She's not a huge fan of, me. I was gone 36 weekends last year, racing, so.
Right.
She wasn't real happy about that, but she understands, that's what I love to do. And,
I did an interview with Dale Jr. on 60 Minutes, and they asked him, I said, why ain't you married? He says, well, I like to be the boss.
That's right.
He says when they get to a point where they want to be a boss, they're out.
Oh. So. Very wise man.
But anyway.
I'm not going to say nothing about you, Chris, because I haven't met you in person. But, Terry, you're such a chauvinist dude, man.
No, I'm not. I'm not chauvinist. I just state the facts.
You're always ragging on women in race car. You're always ragging on women in racing and you carry it on. But, Chris, since you haven't been on our show before, this is the O'Reilly ASA Fastlane. We're talking with Chris Stump. Tell us a little bit about your background. Give us your thumbnail bio there, man.
I guess I have a pretty traditional start, or it would be traditional, maybe 5-7 years ago. I started when I was 15 in street stocks, and just kind of took the normal, ladder of the time. You move up, to like a sportsman car, and then a late model, then a super late model, and we won a couple track championships at a NASCAR sanctioned track here in Ohio, and finished pretty good in the regional points. Then in 2003, I actually filled the seat that Kyle Busch, when he ran ASA, got into that car after he left Yoder Racing, and drove there for a year, and then tried to start my own team, and had some pretty limited funding, like everyone does, and did that for a year, and then they shut down the old National Tour, and that's when I started running the ASA Late Model Series. Drove a year for myself and drove 2 years for Allen Hawk Motorsports. And then last year I joined 5K Motorsports out of Wisconsin. And really, this is the first time in my career, I guess, I've been with a team that has the proper funding to really do it right. When we need the tires to practice, they're there. We have a shock dyno in-house. Some pretty big things that not many short track teams have. And that's what was so disappointing about last year's. The people were in place, the equipment was in place, but things just didn't gel. So we moved some people around. I'm working with a new crew chief this year, and I think it's going to be, really, really good thing.
Yeah, that would have been a traditional thing, but now it's called old-fashioned. Starting in street stocks at 15.
Yep, exactly.
You got these kids, and you've mentioned a couple times that you deal with some of the youngsters, and these kids are veterans by the time they're 15.
Yep. It's sometimes you see that. I guess it's pretty frustrating for me that you see a lot of kids not paying their dues. Starting out, say in the ASA Late Model Series when they've never won a race, and I'd call a big car, they've come out of go-karts or whatever, they haven't run every Friday and Saturday night against the same guys at, their local short tracks, but, it's just the way of times, and, I can't get discouraged by it, and it's a little different racing now than it was, 4 years ago, because, you really have to know who's in the car that you're racing against. If is it a 13-year-old, that has no concept of, hitting a wall, 120 mile an hour or paying bills or anything like that. So you really have to keep all that in mind.
That is, we've had that question, not just on this show, but some of the other racing shows we've done, and Terry will attest to this, I'm sure, that we've had that little discussion with, literally hundreds of race car drivers. I don't think anybody ever put it any better than you just did.
Yeah. I am... doing a little work with the 13-year-old race car driver now, Logan Ruffin.
And, yep, Logan pitted next to us at Lakeland. He was pretty cool. I enjoyed talking with him.
Yeah, he seemed to be mature beyond his years, and I haven't seen another person like that since B.J. McLeod when I worked with him. And B.J., you probably know B.J. McLeod. You've heard of him, I'm sure.
Right.
Yep. And it's 6 of 1, half a dozen other. I think the ASA Late Model Series is a perfect location for young drivers because of the minimum horsepower that you have to work with. You don't have a lot of horsepower to get you in trouble.
You know, Chris, though, Terry, let me go back there for a minute. You know, the one thing that you just stuck with me when you were saying that was you were talking about not running week after week against the same guys at the local short track and, you know, Friday and Saturday Night Deal. And I was picturing that, you know, and, man, that is, you know, I used to say, I remember, Terry, you remember, I used to say, if you want your guy, this is like 8 years ago, I would say, if you want your guy, your kid, to go somewhere, don't let him, don't go into them street stocks. Don't let him spend 2 or 3 years fooling around that local short track with their mini stocks, because all that's going to happen is he's going to learn bad habits. Remember we used to say that? And
exactly.
And now, but what Chris just said, I mean, there is something to that, being there against those guys week after week, because they do learn that this stuff costs money. This stuff costs money to build, and it costs money when you wreck it. And you know, and you know, there's something to that, I think.
Yeah, and you learn how to points race doing that too. You know.
Yeah.
You can't just go, you know, hammer down lap after lap every single night. You know, you're not going to win every night. You know, you take the top five finishes when they come, and you capitalize on the wins when they come. But you know, and it teaches you too. You know, I ran, you know, until basically my very last year running local racing, I only had one car, and we raced every Friday and Saturday night. So Friday night, you know, when I'm inside the car, I have to think, man, how bad do I want to race tomorrow night, and how bad do I want to press this issue, or do I want to be underneath this car all night fixing it?
Yeah.
You know, if I want to run tomorrow night. And you learn all those things. And, you know, I think that concept, and, you know, I saw all my own tire bills and everything like that, you know, when I was younger. Granted, I wasn't paying them, but I definitely was showed them every night. And, you know, I don't see that at all. You know, I'm not going to say every kid like that, but I would say probably 90 to 95% of the kids that, you know, I've been around definitely just have no financial concept of everything that's going on.
Yeah. No, that's understandable because, you know, just in life in general, most 15, 16-year-olds, I mean, I know I didn't, and my kids didn't. When you're 15, 16, most kids, there are exceptions.
Yeah.
They don't understand the concept of money.
And you can't expect that.
No, exactly. Yeah, so that's very cool. That's an interesting concept. Go ahead, Terry.
Well, actually, I was going to tell Chris goodbye. I'd love to talk to Chris all night, but we have David Wilson and Steve Brooks and Jeremy Gershner on coming
up after.
Yeah,
and Gershner needs at least a half an hour. He don't even get warmed up for a half an hour.
He needs a half an hour to talk about 10 minutes worth of stuff.
I hope he's listening to that. Hey, Chris, thanks a lot, man.
For being on, and I'm sure throughout the summer we're going to have you on a lot more.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, and anything you guys need, I'll be there.
All right,
Chris. We appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
All right, Terry, we're going to take a quick break here, and we're going to come right back with
David Wilson.
David Wilson. Okay, and if you can't get David, who knows where we might go.
Excellent. Yeah, that's very true.
Okay, bye.
need to raise your land and business to new heights, then you need to call Evergreen Development and Construction. They do it all, from land development, construction, drainage, excavating, site prep, and even environmental projects. No job is too big for Evergreen Development and Construction. Give them a call at 813-478-8847. And don't forget to check out the late model Evergreen Development Construction Race Team. They'll be at a track near you. And remember, just think green. Evergreen Development and Construction. 813-478-8847.
This is Logan Ruffin, driver of the Torco Chevrolet Monte Carlo on O'Reilly ASA Fastlane on Real Racing USA.
Are you ready to win? If so, it's time to move up to 5-star race car bodies. 5-star race car bodies designs and manufactures the highest quality race car body components. Short tracks, drag strips, road courses, and even in the desert, 5-star has one driving passion: to help you win. 5-star race bodies designs and manufactures for NASCAR, Grand Am, NHRA, IHRA, SCCA, short track asphalt, short track dirt, USAC, USAR, Hooters Pro Cup, and the ASA Late Model Series. Find out more today at 5starbodies.com.
Hi, this is David Strimmy, driver of the Atrius Holmes number 64 car for Rusty Wallace. And you're listening to Real Racing USA with Jack Smith and Rick Angies.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Discount Airline Pilot Guy.
Mr. Discount Airline Pilot Guy.
Your minimal experience flying a plane will never land you at a reputable airline. Luckily, you don't work for one.
Look at me, a pilot.
Sure, we're concerned for our lives. Just not as concerned as saving $9 on a round trip to Fort Myers.
Oh.
The most direct route to Houston? Through Fort Lauderdale, with layovers in Detroit, Vancouver, and Kalamazoo.
I can't feel my legs.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, skipper of the skies. You put the fly in fly by night operation.
Mr. Discount Airline Pilot Guy.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Welcome back to the O'Reilly ASA Fast Lane. I'm Jack Smith. Terry Wall is here with me. And, Terry, I just want to point out we have Evergreen Development is back on board here as part of the whole deal with the O'Reilly ASA Fast Lane show. And I'm sure Jeremy Gerstner might have a few words about the owner of that business. He's been very helpful with Jeremy when we talk to Jeremy later.
All right.
What do we have going on here? We have Stephen Brooks lined up.
Yeah, we have Steve Brooks on the phone. He's traveling en route to Florida, Jack.
That's a good thing to do.
I'm sorry?
I said that's a good thing to do. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Hi, how's it going, guys? Thanks for having me.
What you doing coming to Florida? You going to New Smyrna Speedway by chance?
Yes, we are. Right now we're still in Illinois. We left around 4 o'clock today from Chicago, and we're going down to Speed Week to come run the World Series of Stock Car Racing.
Yeah. It's a big deal, man.
What division are you going to run in?
We're going to run the Great Late Model division.
Oh, okay. All right. I was asking you earlier, give us a little bit of your bio, Stephen, on where you've been, where you've been at, and where you're going.
I started racing when I was 9 years old, running go-karts at US 41 Speedway. It's a real small go-kart track out in Indiana right by my house. And from there, we ran the National Go-Kart Traveling Series, the World Karting Association, until I was 13. And when I turned 13, I ran an Allison Icy car for 2 years and won the Burris Junior Pro Series Championship in Illinois. And then we started running a late model part-time when I was 16. And then when I turned 17, it was my first year running a late model full-time. And then last year, I competed in the ASA Late Model North Series and won the 2007 Most Improved Driver of the Year.
Wow. Were you at the banquet?
Yeah, I was at the banquet.
Well, I remember that now.
Yeah.
Where are you from, Steven?
Chicago, Illinois. Just south. It's town's actually called New Lenox, Illinois.
New Lenox. Yeah, I lived in Sauk Village, Illinois, for years.
Yeah, that's about 15 minutes from us.
Yeah, I went to Bloom Township High School.
Yeah, well, Terry, he lives in a real town. He's from a real town. Chicago. When you say Chicago, you don't even have to say Illinois. It's just Chicago.
Yeah, that's true. That's where the other Sean Murphy's from.
Yeah, have you raced at New Smyrna before?
No, I never raced at New Smyrna. In 2001, I was in a driving school, the finish line driving school. I did a three-day school there, but that was on the old pavement. So I'm really looking forward to get out of the new pavement down there.
That's right. That's right. Mr. Lozier is one of the best in the business, eh, Terry?
Yep. And B.J. Yep. McLeod is one of his instructors now. Did you see B.J. when you were there?
No, I went to school there the year before B.J. got hired, but he was there giving pointers that day, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so you've been around New Smyrna. You just haven't went out there and competed yet.
Yep, that's correct.
Yeah, they got the new pavement down there. It's lightning fast now. I mean, I don't know what the late models are doing, but TBARA sprints, these asphalt sprint cars have done 160 miles an hour. They've been clocked at that speed. It's insane.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I don't know how much faster it could be than I-70 Speedway that we ran earlier this year.
Nah, it ain't going to be.
That place was wicked fast.
Yeah, it's not going to be that fast, I don't think.
That's not only wicked fast, it's bad fast.
Yeah, that's right. And I got a funny story about that place.
Let's hear it.
First time we went down there, everyone was giving us horror stories. Like, man, I don't know if you want to go there. We're like, oh, we'll be all right. Can't be that bad. It's just another half-mile racetrack. Well, we pull in, and we drove all night and pull in. I look at the place. I'm like, oh, man, she's got some banking. And the first time I go out there, I feel like I'm a rocket ship. I get on the radio. I ask my dad. I said, hey, Dad, give me my lap time. And he was a little reluctant. I go, give me my lap time. So I think I'm setting the world on fire. He's telling me I'm running like a 19.1. And I know that a 17-something was supposed to be fast. I thought, oh, man, I don't know if I can go any faster. But later on that weekend, we had a qualifying fourth and made it in the show. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So which championship are you going after this year?
First we got to get this New Smyrna World Series championship, and I'm going to go for that. The ASA North championship.
There you go.
Yeah. So
you're going to run all the North races?
Yeah, that plan right now to run all the fourth wall races.
You know, Stephen, in a show we were doing earlier tonight, it was a drag racing show that we do here on Real Racing USA, talking to this guy who races Harley dragsters, and he had a pretty interesting attitude about it. He said something on the order of, if you can't say I'm going to go win the championship, he said you're never going to get the championship.
Yeah, I got the same feeling. Everyone asked me how I'm going to do this year. I said, well, I'm going to win better races in Florida than I am going to win 12-man races. You can't leave me. No one would ever believe me.
There you go.
You want to win that championship ring next year that we made the announcement on at the banquet, huh?
Yeah, that was a really nice looking ring. That'll make someone real happy.
Might go be you.
Yeah, right.
So, who you want to mention some of your sponsors and maybe your crew chief and who helps out the most with your car?
We got the Fragella family. They're friends of the family. They help us out a whole bunch. And then Midwest Side and Lighting, National Railway Equipment, Benda Manufacturing, Farvin Klaus Sign Company, Hoffman Collision, and then St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital.
Okay. And who wrenches your car?
Well, me and my dad do most of the wrenching, and then I guess my dad would be my crew chief, / spotter, car owner, all that stuff. And then I got a couple of crew guys. My friend Ben Kipp, he's a right-hand man, and then Anthony Dana, a fellow racer, but whenever he's not racing, he's always there to share a little bit of knowledge with us.
So your dad's right next to you, right?
Yep.
I need to know if you and your crew chief ever have a disagreement.
Have we ever had a disagreement?
Right.
Yeah, we've had a disagreement a couple times. You know, every now and then, we have different opinions on what will make the car better, but usually we'll work it out and discuss it and figure out and sometimes I'm right, sometimes he's right.
Is mom ever right?
Mom's always right.
So, you're going to finally, when you assessed last year, Steve, what would you rate it from a scale of 1 to 10?
Last year I gave us about a 7. Last year we bought a brand new car, and the amount of stuff that we learned last year, really we probably weren't ready to go run the ASA series, but that's just kind of how we've done everything our whole lives. And might as well jump in the fire at some point, because you got to do it.
Right.
And last year was a big learning year, but we learned a whole bunch, and hopefully this year we can take what we learned and improve on it.
Well, I hope so too. ASA is going to be so exciting this year. We have some announcements to make, and I can't give any scoops on the radio, but it's going to be a neat deal in some of the stuff, and hopefully you can be part of all of it. And it would be nice to see you wearing that ring next year at the banquet.
Yeah, it sure would be.
I wish they'd go to a warmer climate, though, but I really froze up there.
No, I thought that was far enough south, though. I mean, it was about a 5-hour drive for us. I was hoping they'd have it right in Chicago.
Yeah.
You never know, though. It could be 70 one day and 30 the next, so you'll probably get a little bit of everything.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure.
So you're going to be at New Smyrna, the whole New Smyrna Speedway, the whole 9 days?
Yep, that's the plan as of right now. But we only got one car, so we've got to take care of our equipment and keep the nose on it every night. And as long as the nose stays on, we'll be back the next night.
All right, well, if you keep the nose on it, I might see you on the final night, because we'll be there for... We do a presentation of an award there every at the Pete Orr Memorial Race, which is the super late model race on the last night. And that's just a great thing, man. You get people coming to watch from the cool thing about that deal, Steve, is in that deal, you never know who is going to be in those grandstands watching, you know. And
yep.
and so it's kind of like it's a showcase, you know, and you know, not just on the track, but off the track in the pits and whatnot. You just never know who's paying attention.
Yep.
People from all over the country and, you know, all kinds of NASCAR people and whatnot just walking around, and you never know. They're always looking for talent, so.
How old are you, Steve?
I'm 19 years old.
Yeah, you're about too old, you know.
I know, that's what I was telling my dad the other day. I said, you know, it's sad when I'm going to be 20 this year and I feel like an old guy in the ASA series.
Oh, you guys are tearing me up, man.
I know.
All right, Steven.
We appreciate you being on, Steve. We're going to move along, and I know we'll be talking to you more in the future throughout the summer. And you have good. I'm going to be checking all the stats at New Smyrna. So, good luck to you down there.
Hey, Steve, you and your dad keep coming south. It was nice. It was 80. I'm down around Tampa, Florida. It was 80 degrees here today. Beautiful weather.
Well, I think we got right now. I think we got about 14 hours left, and we're going to try to make it down there for tomorrow's practice. So,
all right.
After the night, but thanks for having me on, guys.
Be safe. Talk to you.
If I could just say one shout-out to my Aunt Renee. She's my biggest fan.
So. There you go.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Tell Aunt Renee we said hey.
Okay. Will do.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, Aunt Renee, we're going to take a break. If you want to hang out, you can hear some of the other guys. We're going to be coming back with Jeremy Gerstner. Terry, he's waiting on your call.
All right. Thanks, Jack.
Be right back.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Rob Partolo, driver of the 93 ASA late model, and you're listening to Real Racing USA on Short Track America.
You are listening to the O'Reilly ASA Fast Lane. We'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Frank Bartles, and this here's my partner, James Brown. As the weather starts getting too hot, we hope you will reach for one of these. New Van James Brown Wine Cooler.
It tastes good.
They come in three funky flavors. Gravity Grape.
Get down.
Crime of Passion Fruit.
Woo, kid myself.
And my personal favorite, Papaya.
Papaya's got a brand new bag.
It'll get you off faster than a big city lawyer.
Woo!
And a single pack serves 6 to 10. Just like James.
New Bartles and James Brown Wine Coolers. The cooler cooler, made in the cooler.
Now behind bars everywhere.
And thank you for your support.
Do you need to raise your land and business to new heights? Then you need to call Evergreen Development and Construction. They do it all, from land development, construction, drainage, excavating, site prep, and even environmental projects. No job is too big for Evergreen Development and Construction. Give them a call at 813-478-8847. And don't forget to check out the late model Evergreen Development Construction Race Team. They'll be at a track near you. And remember, just think green. Evergreen Development and Construction. 813-478-8847.
And welcome back to this edition of the ASA Fastlane. I'll tell you, if you let us know if you'd like to be a guest or have somebody in mind that you'd like to have us on, just go on the website there and click on the link for the email deal. It's feedback@realracingusa.com. But you can just go on the site and click on there, and there's all kinds of other stuff on that website, news and information and all kinds of photographs and whatnot. And, Terry, I think we have Jeremy Gerstner with us.
Yes, we have Jeremy Gerstner on the show at the moment.
Hey, Jerry.
To the show, Jeremy.
Jerry, we welcome. Yeah, welcome back, man. And as a matter of fact, we just ran an ad for somebody you might know, at Evergreen Development. I think that's owned by Jay Carberry. You know that guy, don't you?
Oh, yeah, he helped me out a lot. I tell you, I mean, last year, I think about mid-season, you know, he kind of seen me struggling at one of the tracks. He was helping out David Wilson a little bit, he had actually, was, you know, they're basically, you know, I don't know if they didn't need his help, but they just pretty much had it covered, and they didn't want to run a couple more races, so I had asked him to help me out, and he come aboard, and I'll tell you, with the shock package he brought and the setups and just the way to free the cars up with these crate cars, like I told you all last year, I just did not know how to approach it with, you know, I'm always so used to having either a lot of horsepower in the modifieds and a lot of horsepower in super late models, so you're basically always trying to get the car to hook up. Well, with these crate cars, you're constantly trying to free it up. I just couldn't figure out how to do it, and he turned the program around. We went from being a top 10 or, I mean, top 15, you know, or top 20 car to, after that, I think every race after that, we ran the top 10 or top 12 at the very worst. And, I mean, we were real competitive. So, yeah, thanks to Jay. I mean, he's a very busy man. I thought I was busy running a business and trying to go racing. I think he's about twice as, you know, as busy as I am. I mean, I don't know how he did it, but he managed to make it out to, like, four or five of my races there toward the end of the year, and I was very grateful.
Yeah. So you went down there with you were running super late models and the late models at Lakeland at the Speed Fest 2008.
Yeah, I actually built a new car later in the year for the crate series, and I never ever got to run it. I mean, it was basically a crate late model. I ran against the supers, which we knew we were down like 150 horse versus a super, but our strategy was is, by like lap 60, they slowed down to, like, you know, same time as the crates were turning. So we were hoping that maybe they'd, you know, have, you know, of course, like they did, have a parking lot crash and it'd wipe out a bunch of cars and we could be in the top 15 at the end of the race. I mean, it basically played in our favor pretty good. I mean, I think we were the only car that finished both races. You know, we finished, you know, the 200 lapper 17th. And then, you know, of course, we ran the crate car, you know, against the guys I ran against all year and then some other guys, which, I don't know if they did a different motor change for that race or it just made me realize that how much down on horsepower I was versus the guys that I ran against all year. But we definitely sent our motor out already out of the one car that I run crate, and we sent it to Phil Harper to get it rebuilt because I didn't realize the factory Bill Hurd Chevrolet crate motor wasn't quite as competitive as it was because those guys were pulling me 3 and 4 car lengths on a straightaway. And you know, we survived both of them. You know, never tore nothing up, finished 13th in the crate. We were as high as 8th. And got a right front flat tire in the crate series, but with five to go, so we got back out there and just couldn't catch up to them, you know, because they count, once you go green, count the laps, so you kind of, you know, you got to stay on pace and hope that another caution come out, but it didn't work in our favor. But we still finished 13th and 17th in the Super, and, you know, we learned a lot, I tell you. It was a good test for the big tracks. Like, we want to go to Bristol this year, and we kind of like to go to, you know, if they end up going to the Gateway, we like to go there, and, you know, now we know if we're going to go there, we better bring a totally different motor program.
Yeah, did you, just one little thing there, Terry, before I forget, did you brush up against Kyle Busch going down the front straight?
You know, I'll tell you what, I never really got against him, but I'll tell you that kid, he knows how to utilize the whole track. I mean, when he passed me a couple times and he went around me doing a lap, I mean, that was kind of a neat little highlight. I mean, we knew we were going to get lapped, but when he was going by you, he always put his peace sign out the window, like, thanks, you know, for running me clean.
Yeah,
it was just funny because he'd go by and he put his little peace sign out and be like hang ten, like cool, you know. But I mean, no, you know, that kid, I mean, he drove it in. You know, he would get within inches of your right front fender and within half inch of that wall every lap. I mean, he knew where his boundaries were.
Yeah,
he never once touched me. No.
Yeah, I thought, I was watching it from turn four, and there was one time I thought, oh my, Jeremy Gerster is going to be in the highlight reel.
No, I tell you, the really upset thing about the whole night was, you know, as I ran, you know, I ran all 200 laps, never put a scratch on a car other than the one time. Everybody cleared me, and I don't know if Justin Draughty's sponsor, you know, spotter didn't see me or whatever, but he come down on me in the middle of the corner like he had made the apex and just turned. And when he hooked my right front fender, it took him out. And I felt bad because I like Justin. And, I mean, I hope you don't hold nothing against me, but everybody else threw me no problem. But, yeah, that was kind of upset for me, you know. But, I mean, it tore the right front fender off a little bit, but, you know, that's par for the course.
Hey, Jack, I have to leave the microphone for just a second. I'll be right back.
Yeah. So, Jeremy, what is the plan in the ASA Late Model Series for 2008? What do you think you need to do differently to be, you know, to finish higher more consistently in the deal here?
Well, you know, we already set up a little game plan. I mean, of course, we're still looking for sponsors, but we, you know, basically we set up a good game plan going into Bronson. I mean, I'm actually going to go to New Smyrna, and we're going to run the Craig car because we actually go to New Smyrna later in the year, you know, with the ASA. So that's going to be one of my test sessions. I'm going to go over Speed Weeks with my brother, John. He's going to be there with his modified.
Ah.
I'm taking the new Craig car, and we're going to go over there, and we're going to test it against the supers and just run and stay out of trouble and see if we can learn something.
Now, yeah, that you just brought up. So now your brother races modifieds, and he, pretty much that's his main deal, right? It's modifieds.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, he runs a late model for Kyle and Larry Alderman too, every once in a while. Yeah.
Yeah. So you guys, we're all from Sunshine Speedway down there in St. Petersburg, and does he go and get involved with your ASA deal at all, like last year and this year? Is that the plan, or is he off doing his own?
I mean, yeah, definitely. I mean, he does. Yeah, he helps me out a lot. I mean, he spots for me. I mean, pretty much all the races. I mean, my wife now, I just recently got married, but my wife, she spots for me in practice. My brother usually spots for me in the races. Our original deal last year was the last race of the season when we were going to try to go to Nashville. And we were going to enter both cars. I was going to let him drive one, and I was going to drive one. But unfortunately, that was the same time my wedding was taking place, so we kind of had to scratch that idea. But I mean, I could honestly see if I could pick up some sponsors later in the year if we get our motor program turned around and get competitive with the other guys motor wise, and we get these cars pointing the right way handling wise. I think I'm going to try to put John in the car as a backup car for some of the races. So, you know, we can learn more, and, you know, as brothers, we like to compete against each other anyway.
And you can compare notes. Now, do you guys, I mean, I know you've raced around the Partolos and with the Partolo family for a long time. Do y'all compare notes too?
Actually, yeah, me and Ron Summers, which is Rob Partolo's car owner, we did a lot, you know, being in left-hander chassis last year, we did a lot of note changing and a lot of talking, you know, about, you know, lockers or spools or this or that. I mean, and, you know, I tried doing some test sessions with, you know, Rob, and the bad thing is it's kind of like we're both in the same boat. We both ran modified, which was high horsepower. We both ran supers, which had a lot of power. And, you know, now we're hopping into something that's, you know, 200 horsepower less and more tire and more bite. And, you know, we're both trying to free him up and free him up and free him up. Well, I mean, I honestly, you know, I can't really, you know, say that I did not learn something from him, but I don't think he learned much from me either. I mean, because we both struggled about equally. And, you know, I tell you, the person I learned the most from was, of course, Jay Carberry. And also mm-hmm. the other person that really helped me out a lot, and they were actually at Lakeland, helped me the second day, was Brandon and Lenny Johnson. He drives the 41 late model in our series. And I think he ended up third in points.
Yeah, is he off the charts or what? Where does this kid get this?
Let me tell you, his dad, I mean, people can, you know, knock him or whatever, but, you know, this kid, you know, he ran those Parts Pro trucks. And, you know, those things are all about the same theory. There's no power, and they got a big truck with tires that, you know, that don't want to turn. So what he learned a lot going through that truck series, how to keep a car free.
Yeah, he ran
You know, rather than having bad habits like I got, you know what I'm saying, you know, trying to tighten the car up, his habits were always to free it up, and make his kid drive the car so free that, on the verge of wrecking, which that's the fastest way around a track with these crate cars.
Yeah.
And what do you think, Jeremy, about the crate late model series, though, and the ASA late models? I mean, you've been talking almost the whole interview about how much you drove the supers, modified in the late models. Do you like the concept of the ASA, what the ASA's doing? Do you like the direction they're going, or do you think there's some kind of changes they need to make?
Well, I mean, back to that, you know, saying that, I mean, when I first got into the crate, it was a great idea. I thought, man, this is going to be super. It's going to be all about the driver and to get the car to handle, and you're not going to have to worry about getting outmotored. Well, I mean, I'm thinking that, you know, and I'm thinking Ron Varney with what he approached instead of the banquet, you know, this year they're going to be really strict. I mean, if he said if he takes the top 10 out of every race, taking their motors and checking them, he will do it. I mean, he's got a whole new wiring harness to keep the traction control devices and the rev limiting things out
right,
of the picture.
Right.
I mean, he's just got more and more stuff that, and I actually think that he's going to have more tech people. And, you know, hearing this kind of stuff, I'm thinking this might be the way that the racing needs to still keep going with the crate. But I'll be honest with you, about mid-season last year, I was thinking, man, what did I get myself into with these crate motors? I mean, because even though it's a sealed motor, I mean, now we have these rebuilders that, you know, that offer packages that just aren't, you know, it depends on who you are. I mean, type packages. It's not just a simple rebuild for $3,500 for every builder you talk to. I mean, you can, you know, there's different variables, and that kind of scared me. But I think now they're going to place it where if a guy did do more than your simple rebuild, he's going to lose his motor. And if I, in hearing that, I really feel that Ron Varney and ASA are going to have a real competitive, you know, series where people are going to be more, you know, afraid of losing what they have. If they cheat, they just won't show up if they think they're illegal.
What do you think about that new crate motor that they're going to have for the Challenge Series in 2009 where there is no rebuild? What you got is what you got.
Man, I'll tell you, that way, if I could buy it today and take what I got and give it to a street rod guy and everybody had to show up with one of those, I'd be ordering it tomorrow, honestly, because that's the problem. Because now, instead of having a sealed crate motor, what we have is a rebuilt race engine. I mean, and I hate to say it, but in order for me to be competitive, I'm getting ready to send my motor to the Hyper Motorsports here in the next week, and it's going to cost me $3,400, which is your base rebuild, and it's going to come back probably a little more competitive, and I'll know 100% that it will be legal, because Phil Hyper Motorsports, he won't do nothing above and beyond. He'll do what Ron Varney's, you know, basically, and GM have got together and said, this is what you do to rebuild it. You know, you can do this to the, you know, deck the block, deck the heads or whatever, and you know, you can't change the cam, you can't change to something else, and, you know, just things that these guys are doing to the crate motors because they got more money to spend. I mean, I talked to three or four guys that ran the series last year, and they said they spent $12,000 and $13,000 for a crate motor. I mean, I bought two of them.
Whoa.
I bought two motors from Bill Hurd Chevrolet, where my brother works at. You know, I bought two of them. You know, and they're $5,200 a piece, and that's it. It's a motor you put in a car. Yeah, they let us put rocker arms on it, which that's average Joe can do that. You know, just like it's a hydraulic rocker arm. I mean, you put a spacer plate on it, and you're allowed to change the rockers to a 1.6 instead of a 1.5. And after we dynoed it, we found we had 422 horse. We gained 22 more horsepower.
Jeremy,
yeah.
Hang on a second, man. Like, forgive me. I'm just a simple race fan. You know me. I mean, I'm just a race fan. I don't understand all this. You know, when you get too technical, I'm just like a tip. You know what I mean? And
right.
But I got this question. What you're just saying, I didn't realize this. What you're saying is, like, these are crate motors, but you can take them and have them rebuilt?
Well, see, what they have is they have, like, licensed rebuilders for ASA and GM.
Yeah.
And the problem is, it's like Fisher Motorsport. Fisher Motors, it's you know, Kevin Fisher Motor. It's like McGonagill. You know, you got Jeff Hamner, which is Josh Hamner's dad. You know, and he runs the crates. So, you know, it just you know, the problem is, and you know, Ron Varney had to make it available for different areas of the map.
Right.
We had to go so far. I mean, but my theory is the reason I'm sending mine to Michigan to Phil Harper is because I know, out of the goodness of his heart, he's going to build this thing to the best power it can make, but by the book. You know what I'm saying? He ain't going to say, hey, you're such and such, so I'm, you know, you give me an extra $3,000 or $4,000. And
right. So good. So now my question is, how does the series, if you got like, and I don't know how many they got, but I'm assuming they got like five or six of these guys who rebuild are sanctioned rebuilders or whatever. I guess that's what
right.
You're saying. These guys,
eight of them, I think.
What do they do? Okay, there's eight of them. Like, how does the series police these guys to make sure they're all the same?
Well, I mean, and I think that's kind of like, I mean, I know Terry was there with us. I think that's kind of what Ron Varney, you know, it's very difficult for, you know, for them to police them. But yet, what they're basically doing is they're putting their trust in those builders to say, listen, I want to keep the series 100% by the book, legal, and please don't do nothing above and beyond. But the problem is, it's just like racing.
This is racing, man. What are you talking about?
That's what I'm saying. I'm just throwing one out. Just say, like, Matt Martin, you know, Mark Martin's son, you know, wanted to get into racing. You know, he's crazy. You think he's going to have the bottom line stuff? No, he's going to have the top of the line, the best chassis, the best, you know. I mean, if there was a way that Roush could build him a crate, they probably would. You see what I'm saying? So that's the problem. That's what we're up against right now. Is you got these kids that their dads are multi-millionaires, and they don't want to see their kid running 15, struggling, driving the wheels off that car just to be a top 15. And that's what I found myself doing at Lakeland. I actually had a guy timing me in the corners. I was actually gaining 2 to 3 tenths in the corners, and I was losing 5 to 6 tenths on a straightaway.
So we're really, you're still, even though it's a crate motor deal,
right?
Racing always seems to have a way, whether it's mini stocks or super late models or anything in between, there always seems to be a way that people can figure out to skirt and make it more expensive, get the rules different, whatever, to go faster.
Well, that's why I said earlier, Jack, this new challenge motor is sealed.
Yep.
There's
it's
no
sealed, yeah.
Monkeying around with it. There's no rebuilds. There's no upgrading. Yep. There's no nothing. And that's what they should do for all three divisions.
And see, honestly, that's what Ron Varney was when I was talking with him about it, is, you know, I got a chance to maybe possibly have a Toyota sponsor come on board. But the problem is Toyota don't make a crate motor. But with this new steel motor, they're not going to care what kind of body you put on it, because it's going to be like the old school ASA was.
Right.
You have one motor, and I don't give a crap if you're friends of McGonagill Ford or friends of, you know, Hamner race engines. You're not going to be able to have your upper hand advantage. It's going to be one motor, one everything. I mean, from the oil pan to the carburetor to the pulleys even. I mean, all you can do is bolt your tranny to it, basically, and stick it in your car. I mean,
right.
It's race ready. I mean, and, you know, of course the engine builder is going to be bitching, because there's not going to be a chance to make your extra $5,000 or $6,000 to cheat it.
This is what the argument has been, and I've said this for 10 years of this stuff, is, you know. And this isn't just with the ASA late model series, Jeremy. You know this down here in Florida.
I know.
You know, the deal is, who has been railing against having the crate motors in the various classes? It's the engine builders and those guys, and I understand their predicament. If they lose money.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, but meanwhile, if you don't do something to increase the competitive level, and we're not talking about the ASA so much now, but just
right.
Racing at your local short track, if the tracks don't do something to increase the competitiveness and the level of and the economy for the drivers, you know, what's more important? You know, having people in the grandstands watching races because it's fun and exciting, or having motor builders make a lot of money? I say to hell with the motor builders.
That's what I'm saying. The problem is now you got one or two guys that walk away with the show, and then you got a third place battle for the whole night.
Yeah.
I mean, where if you got crate motors, they're all safe. If everybody had to buy that Bill Hurd Chevy motor I bought for $5,200, and if it was even tampered or touched, so what? It's wore out and blows up.
Yeah.
You throw it in the trash, you buy another $5,200. I raced all year, did not touch the valves, did not do nothing to the motor. Only thing I did to the whole motor the whole time, I changed the jets for one track, and that was I-70. Because I had a little bit too big of a jets on the right side bank, and it was running rich. And I changed the oil. That is it. I mean, flawless the whole year, no problem. I mean, so now you got these guys that are having these custom McGonagall and all these other big motors built, which I call big motor crate motors, because, you know, they're building them, and all of a sudden now you're seeing them blow up. I mean, so you mean to tell me that they're not doing something to make them exotic?
Exactly.
That they're blowing up. Why are they blowing up?
Terry, I don't believe it. Call me naive, but I thought that this is the way it was. I didn't realize that they could do all that.
Hey, Jack, if I sat down and showed you some of the guys I compete against, I mean, I don't want to point no fingers at nobody, but if you've seen what they got for a motor budget, I mean, we're talking 15, 20 grand for two motors. I mean, I'm talking my motor budget for the whole year. I bought two motors for 10 grand, and we changed the oil in them, and, you know, basically I tested with one car and raced the other one, and they're flawless. The only thing we did right now to go to New Smyrna is I pulled the mufflers off because ASA let us to do away with the mufflers, and we did find it made a couple more horsepower on a dyno, so we did that. And other than that, I'm going to go turn it. I mean, I turned the one motor. I mean, I turned it 6,600 in the Supers because they don't make. There's no rule with the ignition on the Supers, you know, as far as what you could run, even though you got a crate motor. And I asked Phil Harper what's the safe maximum RPM you could turn. He said 6,600 with a legal motor. Well, this is between me and you. I talked to five guys at that last crate race, and they all had MSD boxes in them. I said, what chip you got in there? They said, we don't have no chip in there. I said, aren't you afraid it's going to over-rev? Oh, well, this motor can handle it easily 7,200. So if the motor is a crate motor and it can easily handle 7,200, how the hell can it be a legal crate motor? Because my crate motor flows the valves at 5,800 and starts losing power at 5,900.
Hey, Terry, yeah. Straighten me out here. Take what he just said and, like, tell it to me like, what I understand.
In other words, the drivers he talked to had illegal motors because they were running 7,200 RPMs because Jeremy was running stock block legal and could only run 66.
Well, I knew that's what he said. I just wanted to hear you say it.
Any more of that? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I agree.
Well, and that's what Ron's trying to handle, right?
Exactly.
Right, 100%. Yeah. And I'm behind him all the way, and I think that's why I want to run this series, you know, now and to eternity, because I think that he really is going to try to police it, like, 110% harder, you know, this year. And I hate to say it, but I think if he does pull the top five motors out of the first couple races, he's going to find that the sixth or the fourth place guy might win the race, and those guys might not be back. But, I mean, if that's what it takes, that's
well, you know, Nick, now you see, this is funny because, you know, and I am a little naive when you talk to me about the motors and stuff. You know, I mean, I understand what goes on the track, but when you get into the technical aspects, I'm not real up on all that. But I had several people who I normally respect, you know, what their views are because they're people have been around racing a long time, and they work on cars, and they set up cars, and they build cars. But I had two or three people say what you just said during the course of last year, and I just wrote it off as, you know, oh, well, people are always bitching and moaning about something in racing.
But that's the thing. You know, you don't want to be a complainer, but, I mean, the truth is the reality. I mean, you can. I mean,
yeah.
Videotape of Lakeland, and I can let you watch it. I mean, yeah, it's, like, obvious. You see me to the corner with the, you know, a couple cars, and then you get on the straightaway, and they just drive away from you like I forgot to give a gas, and I don't know if you know me very well, but I get 110% out of the car I can get every time I go to the track, you know? It's not like I'm going to be pedaling off the corner, you know?
Wild.
I agree, and if we can get Ron to do the 2009 motors for all three divisions, that
Amen.
New crate motor, I think that would be better than anything.
I mean, I'm ready to get my two motors to my dad for a street ride and go buy that motor tomorrow if they said I could run it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just being honest with you. I mean, because I don't want to have to compete against, you know, down 50. I mean, I'm not talking we're down 10 or 15 horsepower, guys. I'm talking about the way they're talking at Lakeland, the guys I talk to. I'm down 60 to 70 horsepower.
Right.
Holy
cow. When you only got 420 to start with, you tell me that you think 70, you know, 60 to 70 horsepower is going to make a difference. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's a big difference.
Huge difference.
Right, right.
That's wild.
I mean, you know, it's crazy. I mean, I hate to say it, but it just, I mean, I'm just trying to bite my tongue right now and kind of sit back and see how Bronson goes, and then we go, you know, the next race and the next race. But I think that if they do what they say they're going to do at the banquet, I think we'll have no issues. And, yeah, there's going to be some mad teams, and you can actually hear it in people's voices that was at that banquet that were getting on Ron about what some of the stuff he wants to enforce. You could hear him, like, standing up and, like, really getting, you know, kind of assy with Ron because they knew that it was somewhere in the rules where they were gray. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, so what you're basically, bottom line, what you're saying is that in the Southern Division of the ASA, Jason Boyd was not alone.
Oh, no. He was chosen because his dad's an engine builder. But I'm telling you right now,
what'd I tell you, Jack?
You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying they were just pointing at him, but I'm just telling you. I honestly think there was probably, in that same race that he was out there racing, was probably another 8 to 10 cars that had the same thing, or if not close to what he had.
Well, the thing is that, you know, the series last year was, like, really competitive, but in the Southern Division is what I'm talking about now. It was very, very competitive. Right. But I think with what you're saying and the things that Ron puts together here to police this, it'll be more competitive, and just because a guy starts on the pole, he isn't necessarily going to win the race.
Exactly. You're going to find more side-by-side racing. People have to earn spots, not just all of a sudden you just at his time to go, you drive the outside, and you go right by him. You know what I'm saying?
You know, I want to make up a point. That race that we're talking about, Jason Boyd got caught with a sour motor. Brandon Johnson won the race, and in a completely stock motor.
Yep.
And don't you think that the boys were scratching their head because they were illegal and couldn't catch them?
Well, I imagine a lot of people are still scratching their heads. I would think, like, because we mentioned Brandon earlier in this interview here with Jeremy, and, you know, we said all year long, Brandon did more with less than anybody in the Southern Division, man. I mean, he accomplished.
You're right. You're 100% right there, Jack. And honestly, I praise that kid, because you know what? He drove his ass off everywhere he went. Excuse my French on the radio, but I'm just saying, that kid, he can control a car. And honestly, I'm trying to get him to go to New Smyrna just to test my car for me to see if, you know, maybe he can get some more out of it. You know what I mean? I mean, because I think, honestly, you know, he actually just had his motor redone. I mean, and he hated to do it, but he said, in all the competitiveness that's going on, that he had to actually send his motor to a place to have it redone. I mean, just to be competitive. And plus, it had a lot of laps on it.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, at least he's not buying a new motor.
No. I mean, and he's doing it, I think, by one of the honest engine rebuilders. And I'm not going to say who it is, but I've actually thought about taking my motor there because it's near as far as Michigan. But, I mean, it's one of the ones that will be fair and treat you right and be honest. I mean, and unfortunately, there's in my opinion, I think there's 4 to 5 engine rebuilders that aren't doing it the way that Ron and G and
all right.
Do it.
All right, you heard it here on the O'Reilly ASA Fastlane. Jeremy, once again, time has flown by here, and I appreciate you taking the time. I know you're over there working hard on your machinery to get ready for New Smyrna and all that, and we'll talk to you again real soon, okay?
Excellent. Listen, we'll definitely talk, because, I, like you say, I think that you're going to see that with Ron Varney Police and things,
yep,
this series is going to make some serious waves, and you're going to see some interesting things on Karnak chat room, I guarantee it.
All right, man.
But next time, Jack, we're going to have to leave an hour open for you.
Yeah, we'll talk to you again soon, Jeremy, and thanks a lot, man.
You guys touched on a sour note for me, because, I mean, I like tinkering with engines myself, and knowing it's a steel motor, I thought that's what I was getting myself into. You know, it's kind of that's one of my things. It kind of aggravates me, you know?
All right.
I understand.
All right. And for fans of the ASA Late Model Series that have been listening to this show, if you stay tuned, we got an interview coming up right after this show with David Strimme. And then right after that, Travis Kittleson, who's going Pro Cup Racing, and then David Setzer, and then some other interviews from some wily promoters. You never know what you're going to hear on Real Racing USA.
That's another sore subject, promoter.
All right.
Listen, I'll see you guys.
All right, Jeremy. Thanks
talk,
a lot.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
So, Terry, we talked to tonight. We talked to Jeremy Gerstner. We talked to, and by the way, we did talk to Chris Stump from Ohio. And
right.
He's in Ohio. Stephen Brooks, who's on his way from Chicago to
Florida.
And David Wilson is in the middle of taking some tests at the moment. And David apologized for not being able to be on tonight, but he'll be with us next week on the O'Reilly ASA Fastlane.
And we should have some interesting stuff to talk about from Speed Week.
I would imagine so, and I'll tell you what. I think we're out of here.
So long, folks.
We'll see you next week, same time, same station.
Listening to the O'Reilly ASA Fast Lane. We'll see you next time. Same time, same channel.